This is the Ed Milet Show.
Welcome back, everybody. My guest today played 12 years in the major leagues. Let me just tell you something. He could flat mash. This dude could hit. I used to watch him going, that's the natural. They should call him the natural. But then the more I got to know his story, turns out it wasn't natural, that he worked really hard to build this incredible swing, three-time All-Star. And I'm just telling you guys, any of you that know baseball, this dude could flat out hit. But today we're going to talk about, you know, you got someone here that played in the big leagues, in the major leagues that long. There's a mental aspect to what they did and how they live and what they do now that got them there. So we're going to talk about peak performance today and overcoming adversity, all kinds of incredible stuff with Sean Casey. Casey, welcome to the show, brother.
Ed, thanks for having me on, dude. So fired up to be here, brother.
You came all the way in. You flew from Pennsylvania to be here today. So thank you for being here. I know you got a lot of family stuff going right now.
Dude, I just wanted to say, too, like, before we get going, like, listening to your podcast, dude, like, who's the guy, who's the voice of, like, welcome to Ed Milet? Who is that guy? The guy that does, like, he introduces your show.
He used to do...
It's incredible.
Yeah, he used to do something for the NFL, and I heard his voice. Oh, this is way back in the day. It's so funny. 7 years ago, I'm like, I told my team, I don't know who that dude is. I want that voice saying my name.
That's so great.
And what's funny about that thing is, too, is that even to this day, he still can't say Milet correctly. It's welcome to the Ed Milet Show. He still doesn't even say my name right, but his voice is so good. I'm like, okay, he can just say he says my name wrong on my own show. But he says it with such a great voice. I'm like, let's just leave it. Every time he does the takes, I'm like, can you get him to say Milet? And they're like, no, it's Milet. Whatever.
Do it.
Anyway, so I want to go back to the beginning with you.
Yeah.
So Michael Jordan's got this amazing story that everyone throws around that, you know, he ends up being the greatest of all time, but he didn't even, you know, make his varsity team his sophomore year. There's this great story. And it's a great story. But the guy went to North Carolina, had a bunch of scholarship offers. You, on the other hand, when I say this guy could hit, I mean, I other big league baseball players envied your swing and just were, you know, you're just a remarkable hitter and player. But in high school, we go back, like, you didn't really have any juice. No one wanted you. Out of high school, you couldn't even get a scholarship. You couldn't even get someone to look at you. I want you all to think about this that are listening. Wherever you are in your life right now, you're like, no one knows me. Nothing's happening. This dude couldn't even get someone to come scout him. Never mind him offer you money. No one even come look, right? Is that true?
No, I mean, you know, it's funny. We were talking about, you know, you're out in California. You've got, hey, we had 9 dudes from our high school get drafted. I'm like, what? I haven't seen 9 scouts in my life in Pittsburgh.
Incredible.
You know what I mean? It was incredible. Yeah. So, you know, it's a great story. And I, you know, as I look back, and I think we were talking earlier, like, my dad's in a place right now where he's gone through 2 open heart surgeries and all this stuff. So, you know, even more, like, he and I have connected and we've kind of gone back down memory lane. And, you know, it's funny when I look back at, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, like, you know, I was one of the better players, probably 10, 11, 12, you know how that goes. Then you go to the bigger fields, 13, 14. Mm-hmm. And so I remember being 14 years old and I didn't play it all freshman year. And I'm like, man, why am I not playing at all?
You didn't play?
Like, I played a little bit. I was like, hey, you know, Casey, get in there and pinch hit. And I'm like, what? So didn't really play much, played a little bit here and there. And I remember, like, a few games into the year going to my dad and being like, hey, dad, help me out here. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you know how good I am. You saw me hitting bombs when I was 12, just crushing balls like 220 in a gap. You know what I mean? Like, dominating, you know? and I'm like, you know, and I that I should be starting as a freshman, you know, freshman baseball. And he's like, and I was like, do you think you could go talk to the coach? That'd be just help me out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We go get your dad to kind of snowplow in there. And
a lot of guys do that.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I think back now as a dad, and I know you do too, Ed, is the conversations you have with your kid. Like, man, am I enabling my kids? Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like you disable people when you enable them. You know, am I enabling my kids sometimes? Am I making it too easy? Mm-hmm. And do I say no enough to maybe sometimes for a lesson, right? And like, so when I look back at this conversation, had my dad gone and talked to the coach, we're not even talking.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
We're not even talking.
So he says no.
So my dad says no. He's like, you know what, Sean? I'm not going to talk to the coach. Mm. He goes, one thing I will say is the kid that's playing ahead of you, I don't think he's better than you, but you're not glaringly better than him.
Wow.
You're not glaringly better than him. He goes, if you want to start playing, then you got to start taking accountability for who you are as a player and for you, who you are as, you know, putting in the work. Wow. He goes, there's a batting cage that just opened up in the town next to us. Mm. He goes, I'll make you a deal. He goes, I'll buy you as many tokens as you want, as long as you hit every day. as soon as you stop hitting, the deal's off.
I love your dad.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah, and I said, you know what? You got a deal, Dad. He goes, you got to start being accountable for who you are and putting in the work. And Ed, I started falling in love. I went to the cages. I went to this batting cage. It was Grand Slam USA. And
yeah.
You remember Grand Slam? Yes. They first came out. And I look back, like, things you're grateful for. I literally, in my gratitude journal recently, was like, I'm so grateful that that guy, Dick Thomas, decided to put a Grand Slam USA in the town next to me in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
You know, it's incredible when you think back at your life. You know what I mean? So I end up meeting a guy on Tuesday nights named Frank Porco. Never ever played college baseball, but he was a hitting instructor.
I wanted to ask you that. So this guy that helped you didn't even play college baseball?
Didn't play college baseball, just a high school, and he was making some money on the side. But Ed, talk about divine intervention.
Yeah.
This guy knew hitting. This guy knew hitting. And all the years I played in the big leagues and all the you know hitting coaches I've been around, I still feel like Frank Porco in Bethel Park, you know, Pennsylvania, was the best coach.
Wow.
So I would go to him every Tuesday night. My dad didn't make a lot of money. He was a chemical salesman, making like $33,000 a year, you know. So I knew those tokens were a big deal.
Yeah.
I didn't take that for granted. I knew those tokens. I knew the deal was a big deal, right? So I would go every Tuesday night, hit with Frank Porker for 30 minutes, 5:30, 6 o'clock, $20. You know, it's a lot more now. Yeah, it's not $20.
Yeah, right.
But $20. And then I would just stay, man. And I became obsessed with the mechanics of a swing, all because I wanted to play JV baseball.
That's crazy.
All because I wanted to start my sophomore year, really, right? And it's just, when I look back and, like, you know how you talk about just, like, the compound pounding, the marginal gains.
Yes.
Like, I could see myself getting, like, a little bit better every time. Like, oh, man, my front shoulder's staying a little better. I'm really driving off my backside. So next year it comes along and my dad was right. He's like, man, this is going to work. So sophomore year I start JV. Right. And I'm like, wow, this is working. My dad's right. Like, it's that, you know, and he was always telling me, you want to, and I was like, well, I'm going to college baseball one day. And I was like, all right, preparation meeting opportunity. Like, be ashamed one day, Sean, if you came, if the opportunity came along and you weren't prepared. I'm like, and I kind of took that stuff to heart. It was just such great lessons. So my sophomore year, hitting every day still. I didn't play any other sports. I did play some football and basketball, but by my sophomore year, I was just playing baseball. But I hit every day after school. Next thing you know, I'm junior year, I'm starting varsity. And then senior year, I'm starting varsity. Now I'm a good hitter, though, Ed.
Yeah, now you now can I'm break. Like, now
this
can
works.
Break. Yeah, yeah.
This doing stuff every day, like, you know, those invisible games, he really do work. And I was driving balls all over the park. So we get to my senior year, man, and you know, kind of another, just a great lesson from my dad. He had just started a new company called Casey Chemical. He's been waiting to do it. He's 50 years old now. He's like, you know what? I'm gonna start it. It was a, you know, he was like a middleman for, like, you know, for selling surfactant chemicals, right?
Okay.
And so I saw how much he grinded. I saw like the work ethic that he put in, and I could see now what he was talking about 3 years earlier. So, and we every month I'd come home from school and he would be, hey, time to send out the network marketing.
Yeah.
He's like, we got 5,000 letters, Shawnee. Get those lips ready because you're going to be licking those envelopes and sending them off. And we would send them out. He would say, hey, listen, if we get 3 or 4 people to come back, we got a sale. We're going to pay the bills. And that was like the kind of the thought process, right? So during my senior year, I had no college scholarship offers, not Division I, Division II, Division III, right? Just like they weren't there. And you know, remember back in high school, you'd go to those tryouts where, like, you know, the big league teams would come and then you'd run the 60, and that's why you're getting drafted. He was like, this, my leg can fly. You know what I mean? They're like, this Casey, like, does he have a disease we don't know about? Guy looks like he's ice skating quicksand. You know what I mean? They're like, so I'd run the 60, 7.4, 7.5. I'd come back, Eddie, after the tryout. I'm like, oh, yeah, when are we going to hit? And they're like, all right, these guys are coming back for day 2.
Yeah.
And they'd go down the list. They'd be like, and I'm like, Casey, I think you left off Sean Casey. Like, no, you're not on the list. 7.45, we'll see you next time. Go to the Royals tryout next week.
Oh,
I'm like, so, dude, it was like so frustrating because I'm like, is this a track tryout or are we going to hit?
Right,
we're not
going
to hit, I guess, right?
This is baseball.
So my dad, at that point, I was getting not many looks. And my dad said, you know what, Sean? I sat down with him and I said, Dad, I really want to play college baseball, but no one's coming. And he goes, no one is going to come. He goes, no one's coming, Sean. He says, you want to go play college baseball? You got to start playing offense, not defense.
This is so good.
And quit waiting for somebody to come. He's like, how about tomorrow? You come home from school, you come up to my office, Casey Chemical. You sit down with me. We're going to write 30 letters. You're going to write the 30 schools that you want to go to. Division two, Division three, wherever you want. So I come home from school that day. I'm kind of fired up.
Yeah.
I got a game plan. I sit down with my dad. He goes, here we go. So bam, I write the first one to Penn State, next one to Clemson. Then I'm writing to College of Worcester, Mary. I'm writing whoever will listen.
Yep.
I just opened my mind. I'm like, I'm going to play in the big leagues one day, but I got to get to a college first.
Why did your face change when you started to talk about your dad writing the letter? I'm just curious. Like, your face changed a little bit.
Yeah. You know what? Because it fires me up. I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful. Mm. You know, it just, you know, I'm 48 now. So you're grateful for those. You're grateful when you look back when you're 18 years old, 17 years old, and you know, you got a dad that's willing to stand next to you when you're grinding.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when it's not, you know, when everyone tells you you're too slow, you're this and that, you know, you got the guy next to you say, you can do it.
Yeah.
Why not you?
Yeah.
You know,
and told you the truth too, right? Like, hey, no one's coming.
Hey, bro. No one's coming. And you know what? And I think that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
That was the reality of it. Like, and then I, you know, I was like, when you fight with reality, only you lose 100%. I'm like, they're not.
Yeah.
He's like, so we sit down and write these 30.
Amazing. I just got to tell you, like, you're getting me. Like, I don't know why my eyes are watering, but like, I know that was you're not here if you don't write those letters. You're not, I know they're going to hear it in a minute, but like, you're not here if your dad doesn't stand by you. You're not here if you don't play offense. He doesn't tell you, no one's coming, Shawnee.
No one's coming.
It's just amazing how moments in life can define us, right?
That's what I mean. Like, even with my kids, I'm like, God, I hope I'm saying the right
stuff.
Me too.
Dude,
don't you feel that way?
Like, yes.
I hope I'm giving the right lessons. Right. I hope I'm not just snow plowing, you know, the road for them and making sure everything's smooth. You know what I mean?
Because
the adversity that I had was that's where I got my advantages, right? So
you write the letters.
So I write the letters, dude. I write 30 letters. Right before I'm done, I get up to go. He goes, hey, sit back down. He goes, got one more letter. He goes, University of Richmond sent you a flyer. I'm like, a flyer? You know, now it's like social media. These kids are like, hey, look at my swing. Check me out. Look, I got millions of followers.
Yep.
They're like, hey, University of Richmond sent you a flyer last year from the Keystone State Games. Why don't you send them one too? So, bam, last letter, University of Richmond. Dear University of Richmond, thanks for the flyer.
Yeah.
Right. I really think I can play there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. So, bam, season goes on, dude. And I'm still hitting every day after school, and I'm having a great year. We end up winning the championship that year at my school, Upper St. Clair. Mm. But with four games to go, brother, and it's incredible how this works. First at bat, I remember we're playing this team called Montour. I get a pitch middle away, bam, rocket left center. You know, I'm like, let's go. A couple ribbies, you know. Yeah, yeah. Next pitch, you know, get a pitch middle and bam, right center, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm 4-for-4, 8 RBIs, you know, and 4 doubles. And you know, bro, like, you could probably look back at your high school career, college career, and you know the games.
Yeah.
There's a handful of them where you're
absolutely.
Like, that was that's incredible.
Yep, yep.
That was my greatest high school game ever.
Yeah.
Hands down, no doubt about it, 100%. So Jerry Malarkey, who's the coach at Upper St. Clair, I'm running out to play first for the seventh inning. We're dominating his team. He's like, hey, Case. He's like, man, you've had a heck of a game. He goes, how many hits you got? I got 4 hits, man. He goes, how many ribbies you got? I got 8 ribbies, Jerry. He goes, yeah, you know what? That's great. He goes, see the guy behind the backstop right there? That's Mark McQueen. Just drove 6 hours from the University of Richmond to come see you play. And I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, he wants to talk to you after the game.
Oh, my gosh.
So after the game, I went over.
Preparation meeting opportunity, right?
Preparation meeting opportunity. And I remember thinking to my dad, I go, Dad, what's this preparation meeting opportunity stuff? Are you BSing here? Because I don't see any opportunities,
right?
But he's like, he was always adamant once, one's going to come.
Mm.
One's going to show up, you know? And I went over to Mark McQueen, shook his hand. He said, hey, man, he's like, really like your swing. You know, he goes, I let me get back to you tomorrow. So he went back to Coach Atkins back in Richmond, called me, offered me $1,000 scholarship. And I think at the time Richmond was like 30 grand. My dad made 33 grand. I was like, Dad, what are we going to do? He's like, we'll figure it out. We'll take a second mortgage on the house. We'll get some financial aid. So I went to University of Richmond, brother, on the only offer that I had from those letters that I sent out, because playing offense and not defense, right?
Oh my gosh. You
know? Yeah. Incredible. I go to University of Richmond.
Are you all hearing this? Just so you know, the end of the story is this man plays 12 years in the major leagues, is one of the greatest hitters over a decade in the major leagues, multiple all-star teams. This dude got no looks. No look. If you feel like you're missing your, like, are you hearing this? He gets $1,000, and all due respect to University of Richmond, all due respect. But this is not like Arizona State either, right?
Dude, it's a mid-major. Right? Yeah, exactly. Like, it's something like big time.
It's incredible. Go ahead. That's incredible.
Incredible. So I go to University of Richmond. hadn't even seen the school. Show up first day with my buddy Jay Adams. Hey, man. Hey, nice campus. You know, you're taking 45 visits. Yep. I'm like, hey, Ed Milet, let's get him. This guy's going to be leading off for us for 3 years. We've got boom, 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 Pac-10, SEC. I'm like, hey, a great campus.
Yeah, and I'm interviewing you now, just so you know. And you're the one who played 12 years in the big league. So it all works out okay.
How life works
you're
out.
You're on my show talking about your big league career.
Isn't that incredible?
It's incredible.
It's incredible how life works out. It's so true. So I go to University of Richmond, bro. I end up starting my freshman year. I have a good freshman year. Freshman All-American. Like, you know, I mean, in that league. You know, but I'm still developing as a player. My sophomore year, I do well, and I go to the Cape Cod League. Mm-hmm. And you obviously know that's your ticket. If
that's
you can get to the Cape, you know, in that year, Todd Helton was there, Dernerst, that was there, Mike Lowell, some good players, right? Have a really good summer, hit like 340 with the wood bat, you know, almost, you know, lead league in RBIs. And the only reason I say that is because it's the part of the story. I go back my junior year, and I hit 461, and I led Division One NCAA baseball in batting.
Incredible.
461. Incredible. So incredible. I think back to 3 years earlier, or 6 years, 7 years earlier, I'm asking my dad to go talk to the freshman high school coach because I'm not playing. And he just gives me the lesson of, you got to work harder. You got to put the time in. You got to start being accountable for what you do. Set new routines. What are your habits after school? Mm. All that stuff. And then for me, it started to develop. Like, I look back and like, 7 years later, with like you talk about the compound pounding, that pinata effect of the invisible gains, all that stuff.
Yeah.
7 years later, I'm the NCAA Division I champion.
That is freaking incredible.
Yeah. And I get become a second round pick of the Cleveland Indians.
That is incredible. You know what? The thing I want to say to you, I want just to hear this. Forget baseball. Forget it. We're not even talking about baseball, even though we're talking about baseball right now. To go from you're not any discernibly different than the dude starting in front of you, your own dad. Is telling you, you're not that much better than this guy.
Yeah.
And the freshman team, to 7 years later, you lead the planet in all of NCAA baseball in hitting and become a second-round draft pick to professional baseball and then get there. And by the way, guys, in baseball, that doesn't mean you're going to the big leagues.
Right.
Then he actually gets to the big leagues. And then to get in the big leagues and stay is almost unheard of. And then not just to stay, it's just mind-blowing, right? Like, and what? Here's the part for me, because I was a fan of yours.
Yeah.
He had such a beautiful swing, you guys, and I would refer to you as the natural.
Yeah, thank you.
And but you know what? The way you actually did it's more impressive. You weren't natural.
No.
You had to learn the swing. You had to grind. You had to take extra BP and extra BP and extra BP and how to hit a curveball and how to hit a ball away and how to hit one up in the zone and not have a hole in your swing. Because when you get to the big leagues, you're like, this dude can't hit it middle in or wherever,
and we
right?
We just like, infiltrate there.
My gosh. Like, and I love knowing you weren't natural now, to be honest with you. Because you know your swing was so – it was just respected by most people in baseball. Okay, so – let's go back for a second here. I want to just like, I'm so excited to hear this story because I know it's going to give hope to so many different people. Was there ever a point where you like knew you were good? I mean this, like you knew you could rake, but even when you got to pro ball, was there still this dude that like, I didn't start as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
I played JV as a sophomore. Mm-hmm. No one even looked at me.
Mm-hmm.
I got $1,000 to go to a mid-major. Mm-hmm. Like, did you ever have that imposter type syndrome or did you get to the point where you're like, because I would watch dudes like you because I wasn't as good as you.
Yeah, yeah.
I would watch dudes like you and go, they just know something about themselves I don't know. Mm. I always felt like guys like you knew something. Or did you struggle with, I don't know that I belong here either?
Well, dude, I think throughout life we all have that inner critic that's like, hey, man, you're not fast enough. Hey, man, you had no offers. Hey, man, you don't play good enough defense. You don't do this and that. And it's like, no. Like, I think one of the biggest things for me, Ed, was my dad, again, go back to a quick story.
Yeah.
My dad bought 3 books for me when I was a junior in high school. Incredible. I wasn't a big reader then. I love to read now, but I wasn't a big reader then. He bought me, and I'm sure you've read these books too, the Art of Hitting 300 by Ted Williams, I believe. The Charlie Lau book.
Yeah.
And then he bought me The Mental Game of Baseball by Carl Keel and Harvey Dorfman.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, bro, I fell in love with that Mental Game of Baseball with Harvey Dorfman.
Here we go, everybody.
And what I started to do was in my free periods in high school, I'd go and I'd highlight.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's incredible. And I'm not kidding when I say this. Mm. I read that book, not kidding, from when I was 16 years old till I retired when I was 34. I read it every day.
Did you?
Now, I read the whole book, but I did go to parts. Like, I remember there was one part, you know, he would talk about, you know, just big on the breath, right? Mm-hmm. Get your breath. Your breath is going to connect you to your body and your mind. Like, mm-hmm. so if you want to live in that moment and reset a pitch, mm-hmm. you got to breathe. So I'm 16 years old. Okay, got to breathe. You know what I mean? Yep. Got to breathe. Process, not results. Process, not results. It was in the book, right? And he said, mm-hmm. focus on the task at hand. Well, he's just, I'm a 16-year-old kid. And I'm like, but I was like, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. Like, take a deep breath, focus on the task at hand. And then I started to learn the process of an at-bat. Like, yep. hunt the fastball, look yep. middle away, react mm-hmm. in, you know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But because of those things when I was 16, mm-hmm. I started to see that they were working in the game.
Interesting.
I'm like, oh my gosh, when I take action on these principles, they actually work.
Okay, you know what's different too is like, I read that book too, but I didn't read it every day.
Right.
And I wonder, had I done that? Like the mental side of the game, right. the process not results part, I really struggled with. Right. When I wasn't getting results, it crushed me. Yeah. Didn't matter if I was lining out six times in a row. I'm like, I was 0 for 6, you know, whatever it was. Like right. the results part of it. So many people allow the negative result that's happening in their life to derail the process.
Right.
And they don't stick with their process or they don't evolve their process. It's right. true. A lot of you out there right now, you're driving to some sales call. And you know what? If it doesn't go well, if the result isn't good, you trash your process or you don't right. build a new process.
Right.
It happens in everything. It happens in every area of life. So the difference was you kept reading it. You kept staying on those things.
I stayed on it.
What yeah. about pressure? I'm curious for you. Did you feel pressure? I have to imagine an at bat on a Thursday in the middle of the season, if you're not in the race, is different than an at bat getting ready to play in the postseason. Or were they the same to you all the time?
Dude, right when you say that, I have a bat that pops into my head. You know, okay. it, to go like general, yeah, you felt pressure, mm-hmm. But I also felt like pressure is all in my mind.
Yeah,
pressure is all whatever perspective I want to put on this at bat or whatever. That's on me. So I got to be able to control that. I go back to an at bat in the World Series, bro. I was so fortunate, like even that say some of these stories. And yeah. you know, dude, being a baseball player, yeah. and you know, obviously you're this unbelievable entrepreneur. You've done so many great things. Yeah. But I know deep down you're that little kid that loves baseball.
100%.
You know what I mean? So like, to play in the World Series in 2006 was just so incredible. It was like the dream within the dream, right? Dream within the dream. So in the ninth inning in that series, you know, it's my ninth year in the big leagues now too. So I'm like, I remember telling Justin Verlander, who was a rookie that year, and Curtis Granderson, I pulled him aside. Mm-hmm. I pulled Verlander aside. I said, hey, listen, don't take this for granted.
Yeah.
You may never be back here again. I go, this is my ninth year in the big leagues. I have a couple more years left mm-hmm. and I'm going to be gone. There's not a second that goes by with batting practice, grounders, whatever I'm doing mm-hmm. in the fall classic mm-hmm. that I don't say, thank you, God.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Thank you, God. Right? Yeah. Right? So, and Verlander a few years ago mentioned that. He said, I remember when Sean Casey grabbed me and said, don't mm-hmm. ever take it for granted because you never know. Never. So here I am at it's game five, you know, tough situation with St. Louis. We're down 3-1. Adam Wainwright at the time was a closer, right? Comes in, he's throwing about 98.
He closed?
Yeah, he closed
and
for
he
that
threw
year.
98?
His rookie year.
That's crazy.
Yeah, dude, right. he threw gas.
Right.
98, good hook. Okay. You yeah. know, good changeup, yeah. right? Yeah. So, I remember just, you know, I was ready for those moments because I was like, I'm ready. Like, mm-hmm. I've done the work all these years, and I have a process. Like, mm-hmm. So sure enough, bro, first pitch changeup, first pitch heater, I take it for 0-1. Next pitch, he throws me a changeup. I swing and miss 0-2. I step out, Ed. Mm-hmm. Now, there's one out in the ninth. We're down 4-2 in the game, right? Mm-hmm. If they're two outs away from the World Series in St. Louis, right? So I step out. The roar of the crowd was so deafening. Mm. That it was the first time in my career I was like, whoa, I felt a ringing in my ear. Like, and I stopped and I looked out and I was like, what is that sound?
Wow.
What is that sound? That roar. Mm. It was a roar of a community saying, we're two outs away right. and you're one of them right. and we're about to, we want to win a world championship.
Yep.
We want to punch you out.
Yep.
So I remember stepping out, felt the ringing in my ears and I felt the energy of 60,000 voices, right? Like, and all of a sudden I remember thinking to myself, oh man, I got to hear the one voice that I need. And that's the voice that's put in the work. That's the voice that has the process. That's the voice that 14-year-old kid, when he wasn't good enough, he now is because he put in the work, right? Mm. And I remember sitting there going, get back to the moment. Mm. You know, and I always say, like, I have a buddy of mine, I said, well, how do I do this breathing stuff? I go, dude, if you can do it in front of 60,000 people in the world, you could do it in your kitchen.
Right.
you could get it in your kitchen. So I remember stepping out and thinking, okay, I got to really get back my breath because I got to get back into this moment because I'm done. Mm-hmm. If I stay in this chaos, mm-hmm. I'm in trouble. Mm-hmm. I'm in trouble. So I took a deep breath. I got back in. And I really slowed myself down. Next pitch, bam, I get 1-2 ball. Mm-hmm. So I get it back to 2-2. And I, same process. I step out. I take a deep breath. I get in the box. I go through my process. Look middle way, react in. Look middle way, hunt the heater. Look middle way, react in. Bam, I get it to 3-2. I think he throws a fastball up and away, and I'm thinking to myself, I got him. I got him now. Because I'm back. This crowd's irrelevant, right? And you know, and Ed, you know too, I get fired up talking about this, but baseball is golf in a team environment.
Yeah.
And you work with enough golfers to know, you know what? Hey, bro, if you don't have your stuff together, if you haven't done the work mentally, hey, bro, you're in trouble. You're on an island. You're on an island by yourself.
Nowhere to go.
And, dude, the inner trust that I had in myself, the confidence that I had, and then you asked me about that, the confidence, was there any doubt? After all the years of putting in the work, being in that situation with that crowd and everything like that, when I was 3-2 on Wainwright, I was like, I'm so glad. I have so much confidence right now in just this moment. I just have to hunt the fastball. I got to get a pitch to hit, and I got to do my job. And sure enough, he throws me a fastball. I hit one of the hardest balls I probably ever hit. Bullet in the gap, off the wall, end up getting a double. But the reason I tell that story is because when you start getting a protocol for life or a process for life and you work it and you master it, it works.
Yeah.
And it works in baseball. It works in life. It works wherever you want to work it. Right? It works if you work it. And like, that's for me. I look back at that at bat and say, was there pressure? Yeah. But guess what? I went internal and I actually controlled what I can control. And let's get it on.
Dude, I have been doing this show for a billion years. There's like five times I want to run through a freaking wall. And I do right now. Because like, one, that's freaking awesome. And two, the application is way beyond baseball. The application is, you got to get internal. You got to rely on the work you've done. You've got to believe in that moment you deserve it. That you've put it in. That's the other thing about baseball, though. Gosh, that fires me up, dude. Fires me up. Jim Rome is who told us we should do this today, our mutual buddy Jim Rome.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, Jimmy. The world is thanking you right now because of all these lessons that your career leaves. Everyone listen to this, man. If you're not where you want in your dream, I hope this gives you some hope. I also hope it gives you a process. And he's telling you that the difference was all the reps that he put in on the physical side, but then also the mental reps of being ready for the moments when they present themselves, because that is the separator. I promise you, with all the athletes I work with, there's a point where your physical skills in business, in parenting, in sports, just will not be enough. And the separator is going to be those mental things. And the crazy thing about the mental preparation for life, business, whatever it is it's so random when it shows up. It's not as obvious as it is. Like, it's just this, oh my gosh, am I ready or not in this moment? Oh my gosh, am I equipped to handle it emotionally? And it's or can I rise to this occasion when I need to? It's amazing. The mental part of the game is invisible, the game of life. And when it shows up, is also invisible. You don't know when you'll need it, but you'll need it. And if it's not there, that's why you become average. That's why you're not sitting on someone's podcast. That's why you don't play 12 years. That's why you're just another dude growing up who was a pretty good high school baseball player. Another guy who went to play college baseball, was a really good hitter. Just whatever happened to that guy?
That guy hit bombs.
Because that was the difference. Yeah. The difference is these mental reps and then to stay.
Yeah.
The other part of baseball, though, is that it's a failure-based game. I mean, like, if you're really, really good and you're a great hitter, right?
Yeah.
You're successful. I mean, 30% of the time, you're dealing with failure 70%. I actually think because I was an okay player and not like a great player like you, I actually think baseball did equip me for life in many ways because of all the failure. And you have a good saying for what failure is, and I want to give you the grace to share it with everybody. But so just talk about that part of baseball, failing, what failure means to you and what you did with it, because that's part of life too, but it's really pronounced in baseball.
Yeah, you know, failure's feedback. You know, at the end of the day, failure's feedback. Like, in baseball and in life, if you start taking your failures personally, well, then you become the victim, like, ah, man, I just can't do it, and it's this guy's fault, and this guy's fault. It's like, no, man, it's feedback. What are we going to do with it?
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to do with the feedback that we just got? You know, are we going to run and hide or are we going to run for it?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, I always say, like, the Navy SEALs, they feel gunfire, they run for it.
Yeah.
Like, who's doing that?
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, and you think of baseball, like, hey, man, failure's feedback. Failure's information. You know, it's only failure if you fail to learn. Harvey Dorfman used to tell me that. You know,
you ended up becoming a friend.
Incredible.
Of
yeah. A couple years into the big leagues, I called him. I just called him. I was 2003. I was like, I cannot end my career without not having met Harvey Dorfman to tell him what.
This is the guy who wrote the book that changed his life.
The mental game of baseball. Yeah. So I called him and I'm like, hey, Harvey, you know, my name's Sean Casey. I know who you are. You got a sweet swing. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, sometimes you meet people are like, this guy knows who I am. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I ended up working with Harvey, you know, and, you know, one of the greatest stories was I remember I was in 2004, I was really having a great year, probably like beginning of June. I was hitting like 390, which is like, you know, that's incredible, right? Yeah. And I went a time was 0-for-12, right? Went 0-for-12, but I was like you said, 0-for-6 with six lineouts. I had probably 11 lineouts. Mm. I call Harvey one night, and what I loved about Harvey, he broke through your.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, yeah. Dude, like, yeah. I kind of don't want to call me if you got something good.
Yeah.
But if you don't, I'm going to let you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I picked up the phone this one. I'm like, I think this is good. I think.
right.
Things are, he answers the phone. He's down North Carolina. Hey, hello. I'm like, hey, Harvey, it's Case. I was like, hey, bro, can I talk to you real quick? He's like, yeah, what do you got? Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I'm just grinding right now over my last 12. He's like, all right, break it down for me. What do you got your last 12 at bat? So I'm like, all right, man, first at bat, rocket in the gap. Jim Edmonds, you know, makes a ridiculous play. Next one, it shot the first, you know, guy, pick, you know. So I've had 12 at-bats, but 11, you know, rockets. He's like, listen. He goes, your job, and he turns into like that, like, crudgy old guy. Your job is to focus on the process. Your job is to make sure you take a deep breath every pitch to get ready for that next pitch. Your job is to hit the ball hard every time up. Sounds like you're doing your job. I'll talk to you later. And he hung up on me. Like, let's go. Because he knew you can't believe the failure.
Yeah.
You can't believe, you have to take the failure. You have to make the, and the adversity in baseball and life, make it, why don't you look for it and say, that's going to make me stronger.
Yes.
That's going to make me stronger. Yep. You know what I mean?
I always looked at it like, if I were batting, like I was a leadoff hitter, so I try to take a lot of pitches for other guys too. I wanted to get as much info.
Right.
It's really interesting. The big leagues now, like, that's not really the thing anymore, that leadoff guys can still strike out all the time. Yeah. Like, I never wanted to strike out, but I
feel like it's going back that way, though.
Well,
like,
you would know, because we're going to talk about that in a minute. He's also a broadcaster for the MLB Network, so he's still very much involved. That's a whole other part of his life. But I would try to get information. But, like, if I did go 0-for-1, even if I grounded out to short first at bat, I'm like, okay, he's trying to work me away. His breaking ball does this. He can't locate his changeup. Right. Like, I download information from the at-bat. And I watched the World Series last night. We're recording this. The World Series is happening. Probably by the time it comes out, it may be over.
Right.
The big, tall dude for Philadelphia two nights ago,
Alec Bohm?
He hit the home run.
Yeah, Alec Bohm.
The home run. And they said something to him, like, they interviewed him during the game, and they said to him, hey, what did Bryce Harper say to you? Because Bryce had come over and said, and he said, I'm not going to tell you what he said to me. But what had happened was, Harper had actually got out the at-bat before, but he downloaded from that failure feedback gave it to Bohm, right? So that's part of what failure should be. When you miss a sales call, it's not like I suck. It's like, okay, what did I not say? Where did I miss? Did I not hear something? Mm. Where did we lose the energy? Where did I lose the connection? In parenting, when I've done stuff with my kids that haven't worked, I'm looking at the feedback. Like, how could I have said this differently? How could I have phrased it differently? When I walked in the room, was my physiology intimidating to my kids? Was I loving? Like, failure is feedback. I love that term, and baseball forces that on you. Because if you don't get feedback from your failure as a hitter or a pitcher,
right,
if you don't get feedback from that failure, you're not going to last very long. Right? You're going to have to figure that stuff out.
Can I tell
you
just quick story?
Please.
When I go back to my rookie, it was my second year, my rookie year in the big leagues, I faced Randy Johnson for the first time. You know, you go back 6'11", you know, he's with the Diamondbacks at the time, you know, just throwing behind you.
Lefty on lefty.
I was up there like, my God. I was like, if these are the pitchers in the big leagues, I'm going to be out of here soon, right?
They weren't all like that.
It was incredible. Yeah. So I remember going 0-for-4 with him with a couple punch outs. And I remember thinking, man, that's Randy Johnson. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best lefties ever. I got his baseball card. You know, that's where my mind was going. Yeah. We faced Maddox a couple days later. He cars me up, slices and dices me 1-2. He, you know, two seamer at my hip. I've never seen that in my life.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I screamed. I was like, they're like, strike three.
That's so awesome.
So I remember having a conversation with myself, like, wow, I'm getting feedback here that I'm looking at these guys that I'm putting them too much on a pedestal. Yeah. I got to get back to controlling the controllables of what I can do, right?
There you go.
So this is what I said. I started to think, okay, what adjustment can I make here to not look out there at these great pitchers and think that they're so much better than me? Yeah. So what I said was, I've been facing a pitching machine since I was 14 years old. As soon as it leaves those guys' hand, whether it's Randy Johnson, Greg Maddux, John Smoltz, I told myself mentally, it's now a pitching machine, right? I just have to be able to get my process so well that when the ball comes into an area over the plate, that I got to be ready to square it up. So whether it's leaving it at a three-quarter lefty at that 6'11", throwing 100 or 93 mile an hour slider,
very good.
If it comes across the plate, I still got a shot if I can control my controllables, if I can control me.
Yes.
So it becomes that me versus me game.
Your brother, I love
this. Do you agree
with
that?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
See, guys, one of the things Sean's doing, we're going to talk about in a little bit, is he's got something called Think Like a Pro, where you're going to be able to start to get guys like him specifically, their insights on how to apply these things in life. And what you just said is, like, anytime I've got something that overwhelms me, I try to get internal. Mm-hmm. What are the things that I can control? Even like when I'm speaking and there's like 15 speakers on an agenda. Oh, they're going to love this guy. Who's going up before me?
Right.
You know,
right,
I remember even when I played, I'd be worried about, even in college, like, oh, it's Friday night. I get their A starter. Who are they throwing tonight? Oh, I hope he's not a lefty or, you know, whatever.
Right, exactly. Right?
And I started to, I go, no, the bottom line is when the ball leaves his hand, it's me and the ball.
It's
right?
You.
And I have a fighter. I won't say who, but he's fighting in the next few weeks, one of my UFC guys. And he sent me a voice note the other night because we couldn't reach you. And I'd say this to all of you to listen, just because I wish I knew everything I know about coaching top performers back when I was young, because they're human beings. Mm. And they actually have a lot of the same worries, anxieties, fears, insecurities that you have. They've just come up with processes and they get feedback from their failures. The thing Sean is saying is a fact. And so he says to me, he goes, here's the truth, bro. I'm scared.
Yeah.
He said to me, I'm scared. I'm afraid. And I'm worried. This is the best opponent I've ever faced. And, you know, I'm just relying on my training and the things we talked about and some of the mental triggers. I give these guys different mental triggers and anchors that you did when you hit well that baseball players know about that a lot of athletes don't. And I said back to him in the voice note, because we couldn't reach it, I said, hey, just remember this, man. He's scared too.
Exactly.
And he's about to face a badass man himself. And he's facing the best fighter he's ever fought in his life. So we can't control that, but we can control is what we feel internally. So just know this. Other people are afraid when they give a speech. Other people are worried. Right. Other people are, when they're not sure they're going to make it. They're not sure. Just realize this, that like the things you think you suffer from that are just yours emotionally, your fears, your anxieties, are human. And the top people, I'm talking about people that have run big countries, run big companies, that 12-year MLB studs, right? Like the best UFC fighters, the best boxers, the best putters I've worked with, the best golfers, they all have these thoughts that you have.
Yeah.
But they come up with coping mechanisms. They come up with things that they can play offense in their life.
Yeah.
They deal with failure better. And I just have to wonder, in your case, like your humility level, I don't know. Good guys never know they're good guys.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you're a good guy. Like, you got voted something, the award of, like, the nicest dude in baseball.
Like, the friendliest player in baseball.
Yeah, like that type of thing. But do you think your temperament, this is important, emotional control matters in everything? Like, I have found the people that last long-term at things have a level of emotional control that people that are flashes in the pan or just all-out failing don't have. Do you think your temperament, your maybe possibly optimistic, friendly temperament helped you?
Yeah.
Or have you ever even thought about that before? Because you're not like most athletes. You weren't when you played. Even when you played, I remember other guys I knew that played like, dude, Johnny's a good dude. You know what I mean? Like, do you think your temperament matters?
Well, what was funny was I love first base because I could talk to the guy. You know what I mean? I'm like, hey, what's up, dude?
Right.
And I'm talking to the umpires, first base coach. But I did in my mind think, like, when I get in that box,
your face just changed again.
I'm going to rip your head off.
Yeah.
Like, it was a weird, like, I don't mean that, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. I guess you just had to think that way.
Yes, of course.
You know, that's how you thought. But, like, I do think the fact that, you know, that my positive attitude helped me through the struggles at times. Mm-hmm. You know, it helped me I would always look at the glass is half full, right? Mm-hmm. Just would be like, okay. And I remember when I was coming up in the minor leagues, people would say, hey, you're struggling. You're afraid. I remember this interview when I was in AA in Akron. And I used to tell myself, hey, the storm's coming. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good, but the storm's coming. Mm-hmm. That was a little trick. It was a game I played with myself.
Very good.
And I would just say, hey, the storm's coming. Like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm coming.
Yeah.
And I'm coming tomorrow. So-and-so's on the mound. Good. Because I'm coming for him. You know,
it's what's interesting?
To play those games with myself.
Now that I'm in your presence, you're a little, you're more intense than I knew. Meaning I knew that you were passionate, but like your face changes multiple times. When you talk about your dad, your face changed. You talked about that defining moment. And when you just talked about that. So there's a switch that you flip. Part of baseball that's different than other sports is the duration of the season.
Right.
It's a long,
such a grind.
It's by the way, you know, you play 160 games in like 180 something days. Like it's nuts, right? Or whatever it is. I don't know. But it's a long season. So I have to think I think baseball is the sport that could teach you the most lessons that apply to business, because you do have to have some emotional control, right? You do have to. You can't get crazy high. Now, the postseason's different. Like if anyone's watching baseball right now, like that's it's almost a different game. Like the way the managers manage the bullpen, everything's just heightened. Different pitches, getting guys on base, runs, all these things are different. But in general, the sport is a long season. It's not like the NFL. There's 17 games. Forever there was 16 games. You got to peak those 16 games. That's it. So what's the difference with the emotional control in baseball that applies, do you think, life or business?
Well, I think the biggest thing is like it's a one day at a time thing. It's a one pitch at a time thing. So like if I go out there and how you evaluate yourself at times, it can't be so result oriented that you're just fly off the handle, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I could go out there and feel great and go 0-for-4 and like hit a couple balls hard, maybe get dominated. You know, those guys are good out there too. They're gonna dominate me some nights. I'm like, wow, what just happened there? But knowing that I'm playing the next night, that I got the process I have, I'm gonna go one pitch at a time again, and I'm just gonna keep doing that night in and night out, night in and night out, and I'm not gonna waste a pitch, right? And I think that's the biggest thing. I remember being at the All-Star game in 2004. I'm sitting in the food room. It's Mike Piazza, me and Scott Rolen. Incredible. Now, you know, every time you go to an All-Star game, you're like, Muhammad Ali just came in. I'm like, hey, here's Muhammad Ali.
No way.
You know, Barry Bonds, all these guys. You know, and then you're like, oh, George Bush came in to talk. And, man, Mr. President, how you doing? Hey, Sean, how you doing? I was like, yes, he knows my name. It was like another one of those moments, right? So we're sitting in the food room, bro, and it's like me, Piazza, and Rolen. Now, Scott Rolen, at the time, is the third baseman for the Cardinals. And Pujols is the best player in the game. You know, him and Bonds are the best players in the time. But Pujols is, he's just different. How he hits the ball to right center. You know, he's hitting 350, but he's hitting 40 homers. Yeah. It was impressive. And I said, Scott, what is it, man? What's the difference between Albert Pujols and us? We're all stars.
Yeah.
We're all here, but he's a little bit better than all of us. He goes, Case, never seen anything like it. He goes, it could be 9-0 in the middle of July. On a Tuesday night, two outs in the ninth, and he'll put together a 12 pitch at bat, and then hit a bullet to right for a hit. Guy never wastes a pitch. He never wastes a pitch. And then I fast forward, and you fast forward, you know, 20 years, and that was 2004 when he was 3 years in the big leagues. You fast forward, he just hit 700.
It's unbelievable.
He just hit 700. He's one of the greatest players ever. He's got, you know, over 3,000 hits. He's got 700 bombs, 700 doubles. And you look, I think back to that story, and I go, are you kidding me? I go, the people that are at the top, they don't waste a pitch. They don't waste a call. They don't waste a morning not to work out. They don't make, you know, they do it day in and day out, and their habits, their routines, their processes are at an elite level, and that's how you get Albert Pujols, and that's how you get Miguel Cabrera, and that's how you get some of these dudes, Mike Trout. They're just a little bit different than the guys at the All-Star game.
That's crazy. And you think about that, you guys, everyone who plays the sport, everyone who plays in high school, then plays some form of college ball, then to rookie ball, single A, double A, triple A, gets to the big leagues, stays in the big leagues, then a smaller group's an All-Star, then a very smaller group's a repeat All-Star, and then you got guys that are like Hall of Fame players. And that little difference, that little thing, is what you just described. It's the fact that they don't waste days, they don't waste hours, they don't waste minutes. Okay, I got a couple things I want to ask you about. Your dad, I didn't know we were going to go there today, but I just think your dad's like a centerpiece of your life, right? Yeah. Like, so you tell me. We're just about to go on live here, and you're like, oh, by the way, his dad's, by the way, had double open heart surgery recently. But I just want to think about these lessons that I think apply to business and life that we learn from just very special people who the world probably won't know.
Yeah.
You know? And I think your hitting coach.
Yeah.
Frank Porco, right?
Frank
like
Porco,
Frank,
yeah.
Like, this guy just changed your life, right?
He was a labor negotiator with the steel mill. Like,
incredible. You know,
never
even played college baseball.
Played college baseball.
Right, and then he ends up teaching one of the great hitters of his time how to hit. And your dad, with all the mental reps that he told you, just before we go on here, you guys, he goes, oh, yeah, my dad was actually a Catholic priest. Yeah. I went, what did you say? Yeah, my dad was a Catholic priest till he was 30 years old. I went, What? Like, that's not like a minor. It's not like, you know, my dad was once a welder and now he's a chemical salesman. Like, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
So, like, how much of your, I mean, my gosh, yeah. like, your dad was, you would go to Catholic church on a Sunday and your dad used to be the priest. I mean.
Yeah.
What other things did you learn from your father that you think are really applicable now in your life that you've used in baseball and in your life? Yeah. What are some of the other things?
Oh, man. You're just incredible. Like, I don't tell that story much. I think it's the first time I probably ever publicly told that, you know. But I'm so – I'm just so proud of him. And, you know, I guess one of the things that – one of the stories that, you know, that he tells – and I love that he tells my kids too, is when he was a priest, I believe he was in Bayport, New York, up in Long Island, right outside Sayville. And, you know, it was right in the civil rights movement, probably late 60s. And he was part of four busloads that went down of blacks and whites. And they went down to my dad was at the Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech.
My gosh.
Isn't that incredible?
That's incredible.
That's incredible. And I just asked him about that. And you know, amazing because, my dad, I think he was more of like, he was trying, you know, back in those days, trying to get housing for blacks in Long Island, and they wouldn't show the houses or whatever was going on. And so the bishops called my dad in. They're like, Father Casey, they're like, you need to cool it with this civil rights stuff. Mm-hmm. They're like, you're starting to get death threats. Mm-hmm. And I said, my dad at the time, I think was 26, 27. So I said, Dad, how'd you feel about getting death threats?
Yeah, right.
He goes, I said, bring it on.
Whoa.
He goes, and I said, why? He's like, because I was 26, 27 years old. I was trying to change the world. Wow. I was trying to do, like, you know, I was trying to really say, like, what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In that situation. So my dad's such a special guy. Like, when I look back, you know, he obviously left the priesthood at 30 when a lot of priests were leaving in the late 60s. But
it's obvious, bro. This is where you get your heart from.
Yeah. You know,
I just say it for you.
Yeah.
It's where you get your kindness from.
Yeah.
It's where you get your heart from.
Yeah.
It's where you get your passion from.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you got it from both your parents, but clearly your father is a very unique man.
He's a unique man. Yeah. You know, my mom, obviously, I'm very close with her too. Yeah. But my dad was, you know, it was almost like it just a lot about how you treat people. Treat people the way you want to treat people. Stay humble, you know, just that kind of, a lot of the lessons I probably.
What happened when you got to the big leagues? Was he just like, whoa? Or was it just like, I expected it?
No, I think he was like, whoa. I think we were all like, it was like, whoa. I remember my dad saying to me one day, he's like, what's the reason you want to play in the big leagues? He said, do you want to play in the big leagues for fame and fortune? Or do you want to play in the big leagues for service and impact? That's what he said to me.
Wow. That's not a normal question.
Yeah, it's not a normal question, but my dad was a philosopher.
Yeah.
You know, he majored in philosophy.
What did you say?
And because, you know, being raised, like I think I was like, service and impact, Dad. Because he was always big on, hey, listen, don't forget, people show up. And especially because we grew up in Pittsburgh, you know, hardworking blue-collar people. Hey, people show up every night when they come. That guy just got home from work.
Yeah.
He picked up his kids to come watch you play.
Wow.
You make sure you give everything you got.
Oh,
you know, you make sure you leave it all on the table. Because that might be the only game that guy can afford.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like that mentality of my dad just like, you know, making sure that, you know, it's not just about you. That, like, you got to see other people. And, like, I think the other thing was, like, you know, we talk about service. My dad, you know, one of the things I always tell people, the most selfish thing you'll ever do in your life, you want to be selfish? You want to be really selfish? Go serve somebody else. Because for whatever reason, dude, the soul wants service.
Right.
So when you serve someone else, you're like, man, I want to keep doing that.
You're so right.
I feel so good doing that. Yeah. You know, Ed, you serve so many people. There's so many people you give back to. Like, man, like, ooh, that feels good.
Yeah. You don't hear athletes talk like this, though, Sean.
Yeah.
This isn't normal. You're not normal. Like, this conversation I knew was going to be special, but, like, I didn't know it was going to go to this depth. And, you know, he is working for the MLB Network. He's great on there. I've watched him on there for, you know, quite a while now. But now you're starting to do this thing about thinking like a pro. You're taking these things, and you said this thing. It took me back. You said it to Jim, and I, like, replayed it, and then I sent it to my son, and then I sent it to my daughter. And it's this good. So I want you to share it with my audience about the gaps. And it was so good that I've sent it to some of the athletes I work with too. So talk about that. It's because it's a baseball analogy, but it's a life analogy that's huge.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm into coaching. I coach, you know, obviously college athletes, high school, some pro players and all that stuff. But I'm, you know, this program I've developed, it's called The Powers in the Gaps. And I just wanted to relate it to baseball because when you think of baseball, and Eddie, you know as well as I do, you want to be one of the best players in the game? You play in the gaps.
That's right.
You play in the gaps. You've got to shoot the gaps to be one of the best power hitters. Yep. You got to hit the ball out in the gaps to be one of the best in the game at the end of the day, right?
Yep.
Your center fielders, your right fielders, they got to fly into the gaps to make a play, right?
Yes.
And so I look at that like, hey, the power's in the gaps in life too. That's what I love about baseball. It mirrors life.
Yes.
Like, baseball's not easy. Hey, life's not easy too. It wasn't meant to be. Baseball wasn't meant to be either. Life's not meant to be easy. Like, none of us are exonerated from the uncertainty, the hard work, right? And the struggles of life.
Gosh.
And the struggles of baseball, right? At the end of the day. So the power's in the gaps. And I thought about, what is it, man? So the G of the gaps is that gratitude, man. Are we showing up every day? Are we connecting to what this is all about? Are we connecting to the gratitude of, like, when you wake up in the morning, are you saying, hey, thank you? Oh, man, I say this to my kids all the time. If they listen, they're probably going to listen to this podcast, and they're like, oh, here goes dad jumping off his. Every morning I say to my kids, like, my two daughters are still home, Carly and Julian are at home, but my sons are in college, and I still tell them, and I say, hey, man, the chances of you being here of a human being are 1 in 400 trillion, right? And you know that, too. You win the life lottery every day.
Yeah.
Like, right. And so, like, and I think of generational gratitude, right? I think of this, like, so your parents had to meet, then your grandparents had to meet. And then if I go back to my Irish heritage in County Cork, Ireland, the potato famine came, some more cases had decided to have kids. And if you go back to the generations, it's like, it's so ridiculous. Like, a 10th generation grandparent, 4,000 of those people had to get together for Ed Milette to be here.
It's crazy.
Right? It's incredible.
Yeah.
So however awesome you think you are and awesome thing you think are, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
And I want to tell people that. I want to be like, dude, you're a walking lottery ticket, bro. Why don't you start living like it? Right? Why don't you start living like it? And that's like, that's that gratitude, right? Like, oh yeah, I got up, boom, I hit the thing.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
For the life force of that, my heart's gonna pump today 100,000 times. I have no idea how that's happening.
That's so
it's
true.
The ultimate gift. Well, I'm gonna breathe 25,000 times today. Yeah. How is that happening, Ed? I got 50 trillion cells digesting my food. What?
Yes.
I'm a walking miracle, and so are you. It's only one Ed Milette, man. There's 8 billion dudes out there and women. There's only one Ed Milette. There's only one Sean Kicks. And for anyone else out there, guess what? If you think life is tough and this and that, why don't you change it? Why don't you change the narrative? You start to look and you go, no. The narrative really is, you're one of a kind, brother. You're one of a kind. And if we all started to think like that, I don't know. I think the world would be a different place. That's how I think.
Amen.
So when I say the power's in the gaps, it's in the gratitude, right? It's in the A, the accountability for who you are, of how you think, of what narratives you tell yourself, of what are your stories. It's also in the perspective that you take, in the P, perspective, in your process. And the S of the gaps is, it's also in the service. If you want to connect to this world and connect to people, hey, man, serve somebody. How many times does somebody ask you for directions and you go, hey, beat it, dude? If somebody comes up to you, ask you directions, you go, hey, man, 2 blocks down here. If you're in Pittsburgh, you don't know the street names. You're like, 2 blocks down here, don't know the street name. You make a left at the 7-Eleven. Dude, people want to help. So find people to serve. You don't necessarily have to go to a soup kitchen or something. Serve your kids. Serve your dad if you have to when he's struggling, or your mom. Or
like you're doing.
Yeah, serve people that are in the grocery store. Say hi. You know what I mean? Because they're one of a kind too.
Yeah, bro, the gaps, that fires me up. I don't know that I've ever felt that much energy for someone who's done this before.
Dude,
no, but I love it because, like, I also think a lot of things in life is in our energy. It's actually how you feel. People, you're always making people feel something.
Right.
It blows my mind how few human beings are intentional about that thing. Like, you're always making another person feel something. So why not be intentional about what it is? By the way, you are always feeling something. Take some control over that. Take some control over your own energy. Energy is influence. Energy.
Yeah.
People respond to what they feel way more than the actual words you say. Like this thing today, people are going to go, that was unbelievable. I almost drove off the road. They were at level 6 on the treadmill. They're at 10. And when it's done, there'll be 2 or 3. They're going to remember the gaps. They're going to remember your high school story. But at the end, they're going to remember how they felt, how you made them feel. That's how, when you think about someone you love, you can't describe, like, they're smart, they're sick. No, it's how they make you feel. Right?
Yeah.
So it's the how you feel part of your life. Like, that's one of your magic things, man, is like, anytime I've listened to you, it's why I want people to follow you too. Make sure, what's Instagram for you?
My Instagram is at the mayor's office MLB.
Yeah. What, by the way, what is that's really not easy to remember. At the mayor's
office. MLB. Major League.
What's the mayor thing?
Dude, a guy who's the head coach at Ohio State right now, when I was in the Cape Cod League, it's got Bill Mozzagiello. You know, he was like, he was a real serious guy at the time. And I'm like, man, this guy, I don't know if this guy likes me. He's so serious, you know? And I'm, you know, me, and I'm coming in. Hey, what's going on?
Right.
And, you know, so, you know, and he's like, bro, he's like, dude, he's like, you talk to everybody. He goes, it's almost like you're lobbying for votes to be the mayor or something. You know? And it kind of stuck. And then, and I remember Carl Ravitch one time, I hit a ball in the gap in 1999. I you know, slide in second base, and he's like, hey, and that's a rocket right there by the – they call him the mayor, Sean Casey. All of a sudden, you know, it just kind of stuck.
So it's like,
because I'm talking to everybody at first. And, dude, I don't know, man. It's, it is. It's that energy. When I remember, like, you know, who's your favorite guy? Man, Lance Berkman would come and talk about energy. Man, he'd come to first. It's a great conversation. But I just, you know, I love people, man.
I think that energy is the most important thing. And I, like, when Romy told me to talk with you, he goes, dude, you're not going to believe this guy's energy. You're literally not going to believe this dude's energy. And I had already watched you and knew you, but actually meeting you, it's like, it's a fact. And, like, I root for you now. Like, I root for you. I want to ask you this. We only have a few more minutes, but, like, you did go from this dude who wasn't starting as a freshman to wasn't getting any looks in high school to this incredible career. That's, by the way, you've also been so good. You stayed in the game. You're on the MLB Network. You've been in baseball a long time, right? You're around the game still. I think people listen to this want to know if it's worth it. Like, you made your dream come true. Like, I don't know if it ever dawned on you, because you're still doing it, but, like, you had a dream in your life, and you did it. Now you got new dreams and bigger dreams.
Yeah, of course.
But you made a dream come true. What does it feel like? Take us into that. Like, what does it feel like to have that at bat in the World Series, or look back now, or at any point in your life? Like, your father, and he's getting older, he's 82 years old, he's had two open heart surgeries. His son, Sean Casey. His son played in the big leagues. His son's on TV. His son's his son's on my show right now. Gonna move millions of people. His son is, like, really had a pretty darn good run so far. It didn't just stop with baseball. And by the way, when he played baseball, he was in service to other people. He did inspire other people. Lots of guys that finished the game talk about Sean Casey. Now he's on TV. Now he's gonna start with his pro stuff where he's gonna help people. What does it feel like to make a dream come true? Take us into it for a minute.
It's humbling, I think, more than anything. Because, you know, I guess you look back at your career and you go, you know, we moved to Pittsburgh when I was five from New Jersey. Wow, we don't want to be in Pittsburgh. Yeah, you do. Frank Porco's there 9 years later. You know, yeah, you want to be in Pittsburgh. Oh, yeah, yeah. I look back and I have so much gratitude for so many people. You know, Coach McQueen at University of Richmond drove 6 hours.
Yeah.
You drove 6 hours on a letter? Like, thank you. Like, thank you to Mark McQueen. Thank you to Frank Porco. Thank you to Jim Kay. Thank you to Harvey Dorfman for writing a book that turned out to be just something that, like, I just embraced. Like, so when I look back, it's just humbling, because I know I just didn't get there on my own. There was a lot of people along the way. I go back to my first at bat, and I just hit a home run to win the AAA championship. Call me in the office. Mark Shapiro, who's now was now at the time was the minor league director of the Indians. They call me in the office. We're all cheering, you know, but we just won it in Iowa. We go in there. They call me in the office. Hey, Case, great job, great home run. Let's go. We're so excited. Your season's not over. You're going to the big leagues. And I'm like, I got to still tell a story. And I'm like, I couldn't believe it. Like, you're meeting the team tomorrow in Chicago. Well, at the time, there was no cell phones. So I go bolting out of the clubhouse, right? And the clubhouse is in, like, is in left field. So I go bolting out of the clubhouse. Lights are still on the stadium. There's cornfields in the back. It's literally like a Field of Dreams moment.
Yeah.
Cornfields. I go running to the concourse. I got my mom gave me, like, a credit card back then. Hey, Sean, you need to call collect. Use this credit card. You know what I'm saying? Bam. I'm the only one in the thing. I call, you know, my dad answers. My mom and dad answer. I go, hey, guys. You know, there's no internet back then. You're streaming. I go, I just hit a home run to win the AAA championship. And then I start bawling.
Yeah.
I'm like, and I just got called to the big leagues. Like, I'm going to meet the team tomorrow, you know, in Chicago. You know, incredible. And I remember my dad just saying, like, we'll be there. We'll be there. And the next day, we get to Chicago. I don't think I get to see my parents before the game because they were flying in. So I don't even, but I know they're behind the dish, right? I know they're behind the plate. And four of my crazy college friends are down the left field line. I could see them. You know, I'm like, All right, let's keep them down the left field line, right? You know? So in the eighth inning, Johnny Goro, who was the bench coach at the time, comes out and goes, hey, Case, I'm crushing sunflower seeds. I'm like, just don't get me in the game. I'm just so glad to be here, right? He's like, hey, man, Dave Justice gets up. Now, you know, these names, now these names are him. Yeah. Dave Justice.
Yeah.
I'm in the same freaking sense as Dave Justice. Yeah. Dave Justice gets up. You're pinch hitting for him. I'm like, oh, my God. So now I'm watching it play out. Matt Williams is up before. These guys are loaded, 97. Yeah. You know that team. Yep. Incredible. Matt Williams, Dave Justice getting up there. Hey, Case, you're up. So I'm like, whoa, whoa, what? So I go over and I realize our equipment never came from Iowa, the Buffalo guys. So now, bro, and you know, when you come to the big leagues, you got the one flap. You're like, we're in the big leagues, you get the one ear flap. You know, you got the two ear flaps.
College
of the minors, you know. You get the one ear flap, you're like, oh my gosh, but I don't have an ear flap. So now I can start rummaging through the helmets. I find one, 7 1/4 lefty. It's Tony Fernandez. I don't know it. I don't know Tony. I don't know anybody.
Right.
But I got to saddle up here. So I go up to Tony. Hey, Tony. 7 1/4 lefty helmet. I'm about to hit for Dave Justice. Any chance I can borrow your helmet? He goes, mi hermano, it's all yours. I'm like, well, let's go. So I got a helmet. Jeff Manto, who was at AAA at the time, I'm like, hey, Mick, you're my buddy. Yeah. I need your batting gloves. He's like, take them. So now I'm, and you know too this, you know, bats are everything.
Yeah.
The model of the bat you swing is everything. You can't go for your first AB and be like, oh, I've never swung this model before.
Right. Because
I need to have the perfect weight, balance, you know, grip. So I'm rummaging through the bats. Jim Tomey, no, wow, that's like Paul Bunyan. Right. He goes back down 40 outs. I start Matt Williams, you know. I'm like, God, I can't. Manny Ramirez, T141 Louisville. That's my bat. So I have to go up to Manny Ramirez.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm, you know, dude, I just got caught. Hey, Manny, any chance I can use your bat?
Oh, my gosh.
My yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Go ahead, my friend. So I go out there, Tony Fernandez helmet.
Oh, my gosh.
Jeff Manto's batting gloves, and Manny Ramirez's bat.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? Well, the one thing that my dad and I always had was I called the Jim Casey fist pump. My whole life, from 8 years old, 6 years old on playing baseball, whenever I would come up on deck, I'd look over. My dad would, big fist pump, you know, big Jim Casey. So I get on deck, get my stuff on, and now you can imagine what my parents felt to see their son come on deck.
Oh, my gosh.
In the Comiskey Field. So I come up on deck, and my dad stands up and gives the double Jim Casey fist pump. First time in the history. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Double.
Threw a double.
Threw a double Casey fist pump. Incredible. Oh. So I go out there, my first at bat, facing this guy named Jeff Darwin. Boom, he paints me like two pitches. I'm in a spirit world. I don't even know where I'm at. I you know, all that process, I have zero process. I'm so stressed out, anxiety ridden. Darwin's throwing 90. It looks like 107. So he gets me to 1-2, and I'm like, I remember stepping out and taking a breath, and I go, I'm not punching out my first at bat. Mm-hmm. Like, get your act together. You haven't even seen three pitches. Your dad's giving you a double fist pump. You got Tony Fernandez's helmet, Manny Ramirez's bat. What the hell is going on here? So I get back in. I take a breath. It was like that moment. I was like, okay, this. So I, boom, throws me 1-2 slider. Bam, knock to right. Single,
yes!
First to bat. I get the first. My dad's going crazy. I thought he was going to get arrested. He's going crazy. My mom's going crazy. My buddies are going crazy down the line. And that was the moment where I looked back and I go, I did it.
Oh, my God.
I did it. Like, if I don't get another at bat.
Yeah.
And if I don't get another at bat.
Yeah.
That conversation at 14 years old. Yeah. And the guy that's in the stands right now that's going absolutely crazy. We did it.
Oh, bro.
You know, we did it.
Is maybe the best freaking story I've ever heard. Dude, this was so freaking good today. It was so good today. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you, bro, for having me on. I'm so grateful,
dude. I
want
to thank you. And millions of people are grateful. That story... Did you do that on purpose? You just tied the whole podcast together with the first thing we talked about.
No, it's like, no, you just it was taking your lead, brother. Taking your lead.
That was unbelievable. Oh, I love you, brother.
Incredible, bro. Thank
so
you.
Think like a pro.
Yes. Yeah, breakthrough pro.
Where do they go?
Yeah. Well, you can go to SeanCasey.live.
Okay.
You can go there, you know, keynote speak, all that stuff, you know. But
you want a dude to come fire up your group. Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
What an amazing experience this was today.
Thanks,
for me,
man.
And I'm so glad that you even exceeded the introductions and recommendations for you, man. You're a remarkable man.
Thank you, dude.
I'm really grateful. You've been in my life for a long time.
I appreciate it, Eddie. Yeah. Thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot.
Jeez, this was good today. If you aren't fired up right now, if you didn't write some notes, if you aren't ready to do something great, you got some major problems. I don't know what I can do for you. I don't know what else I can do for you. I just gave you the juice. Thank you, Sean. You guys, share. This is the number one growing show on the planet for a reason, because you keep sharing this thing. Share this thing. Go get my book, The Power of One More.
Yes, great book.
And if you really want to change your life, go to the Change on Nosy or Change on YouTube, my show Change. You'll see me intervene in actual people's lives and change their life as well. But man, this is why I do this show, is what we did together today, man.
I got a podcast too called the At the Mayor's Office podcast.
Get it. At the Mayor's Office.
Yeah, we talk a little baseball. We talk about the mental side a lot of it too.
Okay, guys, go there. Go get it. And
thank you, bro. This has been incredible. I'm so grateful for this. Thank you.
It's a 25 out of 10. All right, you guys, God bless you. Max out.
This is the Ed Milet Show.